and they seem to be completely absorbed in everything opposed to Krishna consciousness. So is there something more powerful than Krishna's attraction? Krishna is all attractive, that we know. So if he's all attractive, what is that power that seems to be stopping everybody from getting attracted to Krishna? It can only be Krishna, nobody else. Only Krishna has the power to stop somebody from not getting attracted to him. It's an interesting point. Because otherwise there's no way you can not be attracted to Krishna. Because by definition, the very word Krishna means all attractive. He attracts everyone completely, thoroughly. So the fact that there are some living entities who do not get attracted to Krishna, it means that Krishna is doing something to prevent them from getting attracted to him. So why would he do that? Because those living entities want it. So therefore he gives them a curtain over their eyes, a curtain of the illusory energy, a curtain of Maya. Just like sometimes you see, if you wear glasses that are red, tinted with red, you see everything is red. If it's tinted with green, you see everything is green. So similarly, Krishna has given those living entities spectacles, so to speak, of Maya. So they see everything apart from Krishna. They see everything separate from Krishna. And when they think that's the reality, and they think Krishna is illusion, they can't believe that Krishna exists. One time, you must have heard that amusing story. It's a true story though. When Prabhupada was in America, then one reporter asked him this question: "You seem to be so confident and sure that Krishna exists. Now what if you found out after death that Krishna doesn't exist? What would you do?" So Prabhupada replied very comfortably. He said, "Look, now because we are being Krishna conscious, we have such a happy life. We are singing, we are chanting, we are dancing, we are taking delicious prasadam, we are having such wonderful association, we have so much nice philosophy, so many nice stories, so we are enjoying our life, we are happy. So let's say after death I find that Krishna doesn't exist. Still, what is the loss? We've led such a happy, comfortable life." On the other hand, then he asked that lady reporter, "When you die, if you find that Krishna exists, then what will you do?" Yes? We have a lot to answer for. So therefore, when Krishna places the spectacles of Maya over the eyes of the conditioned living entities who want to be conditioned by Maya, who want to be forgetful of Krishna, then they are not attracted to Krishna. Ye yatha mam prapadyante tams tathaiva bhajamyaham. As each living entity wants to act towards me, I reciprocate accordingly. Whatever state of mind or mentality somebody has regarding me, I reciprocate. If somebody loves me, I love everyone anyway. But if somebody loves me, I reciprocate very actively. If somebody wants to be my enemy, then I also reciprocate. I act as that person's enemy, not because I am factually the enemy of that person, but because he wants to be my enemy and he wants me to be his enemy. So I act as his enemy. If someone wants to deny my existence, I give him the intelligence by which he can deny me and present jugglery of words to try to convince others that God does not exist. So whatever the living entity wants, Krishna tries to fulfill. So therefore the fact that people are not attracted to Krishna means that they are not attracted because they don't desire to be attracted, and seeing that desire, Krishna then places these spectacles on their eyes. Naham prakashah sarvasya yogumaya samavritaha mudhoyam nabhijanati lokumam ajamavyayam. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, it's because I place this covering of yoga maya or maya on the eyes of these living entities, they cannot understand me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord of all living entities. They do not understand who I am, what my position is. That is why people don't get attracted to Him. And when they don't get attracted to Him, naturally, where is the question of seeing His hand in our life? Even if the hand of Krishna is obvious to everyone, still they will not see it. For those who believe in God, everything around them is a symbol or a symptom or an indication of God's existence. Every little thing will remind us of Krishna. But for those who stubbornly do not believe in Krishna, they will never see anything connected to Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Rasoham apsu kaunteya prabhasmi shashi surya yoho. He is giving us many hints in the Bhagavad Gita of how we can see Him in everything and at all moments. His hand is actually present at every moment of our life. It's only that we don't have that vision or that intelligence to see and understand that. So when He says, Rasoham apsu kaunteya, O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water. He is making such a dramatic statement that will help us to remember Him every day. How many times in a day do we drink water? Roughly, what do you think?
Four times?
Well, more, I guess, right? 4 times, 5 times, 8 times, 10 times. So when you drink water, Krishna says, remember me. Why? Because I am the taste of that water. Instead of remembering that it's coming from some bottle or somewhere else, yeah, the taste is Krishna. So when you see the light of the sun and the moon, Krishna says, remember me because I am the light of the sun and the moon. So He gives us numerous indications all through the text of how we can remember Him even indirectly. Here is a direct remembrance, but even through activities that may not seem to be directly spiritual, like seeing the sunlight, drinking water, which are considered very ordinary activities. But even through these activities, we can see Krishna's presence and therefore perceive His hand in our life, His presence in our life. And therefore we should be grateful for Krishna, because He's supplying us every little thing. Without water, we wouldn't be able to live. Without sunshine, sunlight, we wouldn't be able to live. So everything that we have, because of which we are able to live and try to be happy, is there because Krishna has very kindly supplied us everything. So that principle of gratitude to Krishna is very important in remembering Krishna throughout our life. This gratitude is very important in our Krishna consciousness, because we are grateful to Krishna, we are grateful to all the previous acharyas, to Srila Prabhupada, to all the Vaishnavas. In the Panchatantra, there is a story of a crane, bird, not these construction cranes. By the way, you know the national bird of Dubai? It's the crane. But which crane? This construction crane. That's a joke, by the way. Because there's so many cranes all over the place, wherever you go in Dubai. Right? So this crane I'm talking about is not the construction crane, it's the bird. So this crane and a Brahmana, they were good friends. They got very close to each other. Now it so happened that this Brahmana was very broad-minded and very detached and self-satisfied. So he wasn't greedy, but the crane was very greedy by nature. So the Brahmana would help the crane in every little thing. But the crane didn't seem to be very grateful, but the Brahmana did not mind. He was simply acting according to his nature. So one time, the crane was looking sad. So the Brahmana asked him, what happened? He said, you know, I want to get wealthy. I want to become very rich very soon. And I thought you would help me. But you're so detached, you're just happy, living in a little hut. But I want money. I want a lot of wealth. Oh, really? Okay, then I can tell you something. You know, there's this group of Rakshasas. You know, Rakshasas, demons who live at the other end of the forest. And because I help them, I'm very friendly with them. They, even though they're very inimical and hostile towards everybody and they kill them, but to me they're very friendly. And they have some supernatural powers. And they can give you a mantra by which you can obtain a lot of wealth. So then he said, okay, but if I go to them and they will kill me, he said, no, you just give my reference. And then they will be okay with you. So he goes inside. And they want to pounce on him. But then he said, no, look, I'm the friend of such and such Brahmana. Oh, all right. Then you're our guest, you're our friend. Come, sit down. What can we do for you? I want that mantra from you that will make me very rich. Okay, since you're the Brahmin's friend, all right, we'll give it to you. Here it is. They told him the mantra. And then he came back and he was very happy because he became very wealthy. But then he started thinking, I want to be the only one with this mantra. But this Brahmin also knows it. So I must do away with him. So then he kills him. Now the Rakshasas, they also empowered with some kind of supernatural ability by which they were able to understand what had happened. So he went back to them for some other mantra and they said, no, we understand what you've done and we would have liked to kill you and eat you, but we are not cannibals. And also we have a principle. Even though we kill many, but our principle is we never kill an ungrateful person. So we're not going to kill you ourselves. But what we're going to do is to send you off to our cousins who are cannibals. They're also Rakshasas, but they eat humans. So we'll send you off to them. So they took this crane and they handed the crane over to those cannibal Rakshasas. They said, if you don't eat, why are you giving him to us? He said, because we have a principle that we don't eat grateful. We don't eat ungrateful people or animals. So then they said, actually we eat humans, we eat each other also. But we have a principle. We also never eat ungrateful entities. So this was the moral of the story there. The moral of the story being, I remember this from, you know, we used to read Panchatantra, somehow this story came to mind. How many of you have read Panchatantra, by the way? Oh, 50% of your life is gone if you haven't read. Childhood should be full of stories. Full of stories. We should have so many stories that we learn from, many lessons. Later on in life, then we realize the value of these things and we can apply them in our life. There are many instructive lessons to also learn. Anyway, so the story is that an ungrateful person is not wanted anywhere. Can never attain success in any endeavor, in any initiative. So all the more so in Krishna consciousness, if you really want to see Krishna's hand in our life and to be conscious of Krishna all the time, we have to be grateful to Krishna that he's providing us not just everything we have to eat and to survive and live, the food we eat, the air we breathe, the oxygen, the light and heat and everything. But He has supplied us with the association of devotees, because of which we are able to remember Krishna. We are able to understand who Krishna is, to believe that He is the Supreme Lord. So this principle of gratitude is very important internally, to cultivate that. Also, along with this, an important point is that we should try to avoid getting distracted by our possessions and by our desires for happiness and progress in this world. They act like blinds for us. They act like further curtains which blind us and will distort our vision. So even though we may be devotees and we are seeing Krishna, Krishna's hand, but very often that vision gets obstructed. You know, imagine you're driving a car and it's raining heavily and the rain is coming in straight onto the windshield in the front. So you have to have a wiper that removes it, that removes the water away instantly, otherwise you won't be able to see what's ahead. And that will be very dangerous because you could have an accident. So similarly, our attachment to positions, to enjoyment, to possessions, etc., are stumbling blocks in us trying to see Krishna's hand. They block our vision. And therefore, even when Krishna presents Himself to us and He is visible in everything around us, even though Krishna is right in front of us, we cannot perceive His presence. The Bhagavatam says, Pashyanna Pina Pashyati. That means we see but still don't see. Last few days have been a little bit of a storytelling mood, so let me tell you one more story. Because some devotees tell me, please don't tell philosophy, tell us stories. So are you little children? I tell them. I realize actually we all have the child in us, we all want to hear stories. So anyway, it so happened there was a king. He was a nice devotee king. And he served Krishna very nicely, and Krishna was so pleased with him that he appeared in front of him, gave him darshan. So the king was overjoyed and he served him nicely, and Krishna says, my dear king, I'm so pleased with you. Please tell me what you want. I'm willing to offer you any boon. Now this king was not a selfish person at all, and he looked after his subjects in such a nice way, so selflessly. He wanted the well-being and welfare of his subjects. So he said, my dear Lord, I don't want anything for myself. You have given me your darshan, you have given me the opportunity to serve you and to become your devotee. What more can I ask for? I am completely satisfied for myself. But I am feeling sad for my subjects, especially those who do not have faith in you, those who are not your devotees. This is exactly like what Prahlad Maharaj used to say, right? He prays to Lord Narasimhadev and says, my dear Lord, I know this material world is supposed to be a very dangerous and fearful place, full of miseries. But I am not at all disturbed by this material world. I am happy here because I am completely absorbed in the narrations of your activities, your pastimes, your glories and so on. So therefore my mind always experiences a higher transcendental bliss. So these so-called dangers and fears of this world don't touch me at all. But I have one misery. I have one suffering, and that is for those people who have turned their backs to you, who are not inclined to serve you with love and faith. and they simply try to make material advancement in this world. Maya sukhaya, this illusory happiness. Bharam udvahato, so they take on all these false responsibilities in this world and think that this will bring them happiness. But actually, that's only a prescription for suffering. So I feel for them. So the king was also in that mood. So Krishna says, that's very wonderful. So what do you want? What boon do you want for your subjects? Please give them a darshan one time. I'm sure that will change their life and they'll all become devotees. Now you see, this important point is, it's not easy to get Krishna's darshan. And it's not such a cheap thing, right? If you're not qualified for Krishna's darshan, well then, you shouldn't get it. And even if you get the darshan when you're not qualified, that is not going to be of much help. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentions in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, that so many great demons saw the Lord face to face. Ravana saw him. Hiranyaksha saw Varaha Dev. Hiranyakashipu saw Lord Narasimha Dev. Shalva, Shishupal, Duryodhana, many others saw Krishna face to face. But they didn't become devotees. Their feeling of envy and hatred and anger and ego, that didn't go away. So darshan of Krishna is fruitful only when our heart is ready to see him. When our heart is full of devotion for Krishna, then the darshan becomes actually fruitful. Otherwise, it's not very effective. So Krishna knows this. So he told the king, but my dear king, please understand, what is the use of such darshan? Only one who is qualified to see me by dint of devotion will see me. Otherwise, there will be no benefit for them and they will not be able to see me also, even if I come and stand in front of them. But the king was saying, my dear Lord, please, for the sake of my people, I love my people very much. So he said, all right. So what we'll do is, I'll be standing on the hill outside the city. There was a certain hill that was some distance away from the capital city. I'll be waiting there at noon tomorrow. So you bring the subjects along with you. So the king was overjoyed. He said, yes, certainly, my lord, I will do that. So he made announcements all through the kingdom. And then everybody said, yes, yes, we would like to have darshan of Lord Krishna. So then the whole population of the capital city started on this journey towards that hill that was at some distance. Along the way, soon after they had exited the boundary of the city, they saw a little hill there. But lo and behold, this was not an ordinary hill of mud and stones. It was made of coins. Coins of copper. Copper also has some value, right? It's not useless. So they said, oh, many of the citizens rushed towards that because they were greedy. They felt, oh, I can take so many coins here and I can become rich, I can store up these coins. So they went and they started holding these coins. And the king was saying, don't be greedy, don't be greedy. Just take darshan of Krishna, that is more valuable than anything else. That is the greatest wealth in life. But they were so preoccupied with those coins, they could not understand or pay heed to the king's good advice. So the remaining people continued to walk with the king. After some time, they found another hill. But this time, it was a hill made of silver coins. And some other people there, they said, my God, silver coins. So they forgot God, who they were going to see, because silver was their God. So they went and they started getting as many silver coins as they could, putting them in the pockets, putting them here and there. The king was trying to preach to them, don't be so greedy, come, we're going to see Krishna. But they could not pay heed. Their attachment to gaining more wealth was so strong. So whoever was remaining now, they went ahead with the king. And then they came across another little mountain or a hill that had gold coins. As the remaining people went mad, they just rushed towards the gold coins and they started filling their pockets and everything, and they were holding as many as they could get. And the king was filled with dismay. He said, "Oh, how unfortunate. The greed for the wealth of this world is depriving these people of the most precious treasure in life. How unfortunate." But what could he do? He understood devotion to Krishna cannot be done by force. It has to come willingly. So now there was only the king and the queen left. And the king was telling the queen, "Just see the power of greed in this world and how it distorts our vision and how it blocks our understanding of God. These people came with the intention of seeing Krishna, but their greed for wealth has taken them away from Krishna." The queen was nodding, "Yes, how right you are." But as they went ahead, there was yet another hill, small one, and this time there were precious, colorful diamonds. Now the queen lost her composure and she began to run and say, "What are you doing? Where are you going?" She said, "Later, Krishna can wait, I have my diamonds first." So she went to the diamonds and she was filling up everything, whatever she had in her clothes, tying up things in a little bundle, keeping it here, there. She was mad, she was going after the diamonds. The king felt very sorry. He was left all alone. So he went towards that hill and there was Krishna standing. And Krishna said, "So, none of your citizens have accompanied you? Not even your queen?" And the king was standing with bowed head, "Yes, what to do, what to do?" And Krishna says, "Yes, that's why I told you. No one can see me until they're ready." And the moral of the story, of course, is that even though these people seem to be somewhat inclined to see Krishna, but their hankering for the things of this world, especially for wealth, prevented them from having direct darshan of Krishna. What to speak of just indirectly experiencing His hand in their life. So just see how the attachments for the things of this world can interfere with our spiritual consciousness and with our sense of understanding of how Krishna is present in our life at every moment. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Bhogaishwarya prasaptanam taya paharita chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhihi samadho na vidhiyate." He says, for those whose minds, prasaptanam, those whose minds are asakta, asakta means attached, prasakta means extremely attached. For those whose minds are extremely attached to two things, bhoga and aishwarya. Bhoga means enjoyment, aishwarya means opulence, wealth. So for those whose minds are overly attached to the opulence and to the enjoyment of this world, the residual determination, vyavasayatmika buddhi, that is necessary to serve me, Krishna says, will not arise. So therefore, we have to try to keep our life simple, not worry too much about the things of this world, not hanker for so much of status and position and power and prestige and money and all the goods that money can buy, which are not good actually. These goods are not good. Yes, they only distract us. So rather we should say all the bags that money can buy, not all the goods that money can buy. Because these are simply distractions. The more and more of these things that you accumulate, the more they will distract you from Krishna, because you have that many things to take care of now. And how do we achieve all of this? By doing our devotional practices regularly. There is a very famous verse that from the Puranas which Srila Prabhupada used to quote very often. Satatam smartavyah Vishnu vismartavyo na jatuchit sarve vidhi nishedhasyur ayatayor eva kinkaraha. How many of you have heard this verse? Okay, it's a very important verse. The meaning of this verse is Satatam smartavyah Vishnu. Always remember Vishnu or Krishna. Vismartavyo na jatuchit. At any moment you should not forget him. In other words, always remember him and never forget him. Sarve vidhi nishedhasyur etayor eva kinkaraha. All the rules and regulations given in the Vedic scriptures are simply servants of these two fundamental principles. Which are the two fundamental principles? Always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. Now, don't both these things mean the same thing? If you're always remembering Krishna, then obviously you're never forgetting Krishna. So why are these two things mentioned here separately? Can anyone say? Why is this injunction, these two injunctions given separately when they actually mean the same thing? Yes.
One is spiritual, one is material?
Yes, but why separately? Just saying one of them is enough. One means the other. If you're always remembering Krishna, then automatically you'll not forget Krishna. If you say never forget Krishna, it means you should always remember Krishna. The answer is, because this injunction is meant for devotees like us who are practicing to remember Krishna, who have not yet reached the point where we always remember Krishna. You see, if someone hears this verse, he may think, a new devotee may think, well, Krishna consciousness is not for me. How can I think of Krishna at every moment? Is that possible? It's not humanly possible for me. So I can't do it. So he may get discouraged. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one of our great acharyas, has commented on this verse and said that actually what this verse means, when it says, always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna, means that every day you should perform activities that will help you to remember Krishna. Every day you should do things that will ensure that you don't forget Krishna. It's not on a moment-to-moment basis for us, otherwise we just get frightened and go away saying, not for me. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is telling new devotees like us, because we are all new devotees, yes? Even if we've been around for some years, we're still very new. He said, don't be worried. This means that you must practice your sadhana bhakti every day and follow the rules and regulations. So, always remember Krishna means every day you must perform activities that remind you of Krishna. Like what? Chanting Hare Krishna. What else? Worshipping the deity. Reading Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. What else? Doing kirtan. Taking prasadam. Having association of devotees. Hearing lectures on Krishna consciousness.
Serving devotees.
Holy Dham. Living in the Holy Dham.
Living in the Holy Dham, or at least visiting the Holy Dham whenever possible. So these are the positive spiritual actions that will help us to always remember God. When you always remember God, you will also see His hand in your life. You will experience how He is there with you at every instant. So just as always remember Krishna means that we should perform those spiritual activities that help us to remember Krishna, similarly, never forget Krishna means to avoid those activities that will make us forget Krishna. So what are those activities which when performed, will make us forget Krishna?
Non-devotee association.
Non-devotee association, correct. What else?
Eating outside.
Eating outside, meaning you can eat in devotees' homes, but eating in karmi restaurants, yes?
Watching then? TV and movies.
Watching TV and watching karmi entertainment and such things. What else?
Reading mundane literature.
Reading mundane literature.
Hearing and watching Bollywood.
Bollywood, yes. Hollywood and Bollywood. Yes. What else? What about the four regulative principles?
Yeah.
You shouldn't forget that, right? So we have to follow them. Why are the four regulative principles there? Following the four regulative principles is not a spiritual activity. Are you shocked? Not eating meat doesn't make you very spiritual, you know. There are many vegetarians also. Of course, it's less sinful, undoubtedly. But merely being vegetarian, merely not drinking alcohol, etc., doesn't make you in and of itself a spiritual person. But if you do these things, that interferes in the process of you becoming spiritual. So therefore, you have to not do those things. You know, when you go to a doctor, he gives two types of instructions, do's and don'ts. You eat this food, you take this medicine, you do this, you do that. And he also gives a series of don'ts. You don't do this, you don't do that. So similarly, in the Vedic scriptures, we have two types of injunctions. Vidhi, which is rules that must be done. And nishedh, which means prohibitions, which must be followed. So the rules like chanting Hare Krishna, reading Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, they are vidhis which help us to remember Krishna always. To see and feel His presence in our life. The nishedha, the prohibitions, are meant to prevent us from forgetting Krishna. We have to do both these things. Let's say you're cooking. You're trying to light a fire. As soon as you lit it, then you pour some water on it. Again try to light it. Again pour water. What's going to happen? You're never going to be able to light the fire. Because when you're lighting the fire, you shouldn't do anything that will interfere with the growth of the fire. So similarly, when you're chanting Hare Krishna, we shouldn't do activities that will interfere with the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra producing love of Godhead in our heart. So when we do all these prohibited activities, then they are obstructions for us. They come in the way of us being able to see Krishna's presence and His hand in our life. So therefore we have to follow our sadhana bhakti very strongly. And when we do that, automatically the perfection will come. One day, whether it's today or tomorrow, after 10 years, after 50 years, this life, next life, it will come. So we must remain sincere in the practice of our Krishna consciousness. We must persevere and not lose heart. If you're going to lose heart, oh well, I've been practicing 5 years and I still don't get tears of ecstasy and I don't get all the shivering that we hear about in the Srimad Bhagavatam and my hairs never stand on end when I chant Hare Krishna. Therefore, I better stop chanting because it doesn't seem to be working. No. So we have to continue, and the more rigorously and sincerely we follow these principles, the more the results will show. Inasmuch as the more obedient a patient is, the quicker he or she will get relief from the misery. But the unfortunate fact of the matter is that patients are usually impatient. Yes? We want the results very fast, and it doesn't happen, we blame the doctor. So similarly, as practicing devotees also, we shouldn't become so impatient. While continuing to discharge our devotional service, we should also be patient, thinking Krishna's mercy will come at some appropriate time. When Krishna thinks it's right, when we are ready. It's very simple. Then we will be able to experience Krishna's hand everywhere, even in the so-called bad things of life. When the bad things come, quote-unquote bad, we say, why has Krishna done this? But that so-called bad thing is also Krishna's intervention in our life, and that is His mercy. So we should not make a distinction between good and bad, on the material platform, that is, in our life. Materially, some things may be good, some things may be bad. As far as devotees are concerned, both are to be seen as the mercy of the Lord, as the Lord's kind guiding hand in our life. If we have this attitude and this approach, then definitely our life will be lit up with Krishna consciousness everywhere. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments, differences of opinion, objections?
Finding it difficult to understand how once we see Krishna, we still not have an attraction for Him. I was wondering if you could explain that further.
When we see Krishna, we still don't get an attraction for Him. Why is that? Mm. An extreme case of that is when Duryodhan saw Krishna, didn't get attracted to Him.
Is it because
Shalva saw Krishna, didn't get attracted? So when we see Krishna, we don't get attracted. It means there's some traces there of that propensity still remaining, lingering in the heart, which is preventing us from getting attached to Him, to attract it to Him. So Krishna is still saying, no, no, Prabhu, time is still, there is still time, you're not ready yet. Work harder, chant better, then it will come, the attraction will come. Right? Any other question? Yes, Ramchandra.
So, Maharaj, there's a tendency that when we are engaged in Krishna consciousness, when things, good things happen, we're usually very enthused to do our devotional service to Krishna. But as soon as anything adverse takes place, immediately, you know, like the enthusiasm wanes, even though we are trying. Yeah, it seems as if, yeah, even if we want to, intellectually and mentally we understand that, you know, like, yes, Krishna is doing it for my own good. But the enthusiasm for devotional service is down.
Yeah. So, just like when a parent gives a child what it wants, a sweet or a lollipop or something, the child is very happy. And when the parent gives the child probably a bitter medicine that it needs to take, the child is very upset and angry, doesn't like it. But both are expressions of the parent's love for the child. The child, being immature, is not in a position to understand that and sees one as an indication of love, and for the other one, the child says, I hate you. So how many times children, when they're small, they tell their parents that, yes? Because the parents make them do things that they don't like to do. But it's for their good. But when they grow up, they realize, oh yes, actually my parents did the right thing. They tried to do this for me. It was good. It was for my good. So similarly, when we are not sufficiently grown up, so to speak, in Krishna consciousness and not so advanced, in Krishna consciousness, then we make that distinction between so-called good and so-called bad. And what appeals to our mind is what we think is good. So we appreciate that with Krishna. Krishna, you've done such a wonderful thing. But when something is unpleasant to our mind, it doesn't fit into our material conception of good, then we think Krishna is cruel. Why has he done this to us? So it's a question of basically doing our Krishna consciousness continuously and realizing that yes, everything that Krishna does is his loving hand in our life. And therefore we should treat both these equally as his mercy. Even though it's hard to actually think like that when these things actually happen in our life, but we should try. We should practice. And we will get plenty of opportunities, because unpleasant circumstances will come in our life very regularly. Right? Okay?
Thank you.
Yes.
Maharaj, if we know some, a friend who we know that once they are attracted to Krishna, they will get attracted, and yet the curtain is not drawing up, what should we do as their friend to help them at least recognize Krishna?
Okay, your question is that if we have a friend and the curtain of Maya is right, they're wearing the spectacles of Maya, and you want to bring them to Krishna consciousness and they're not so keen. Yes? They're not so keen.
You know that once they recognize and they get attracted, they will be quite strong in their attraction. But it's getting that initial stage.
Okay, so once you know that once they get some understanding of Krishna, then they will become attracted. So then we should make our efforts to remove that curtain. If they are receptive, if they are willing to listen, then we can speak to them, but in a way that is palatable to them. Right? So we have to judge what each person is like and what it is that they would like to hear that will help them to progress in Krishna consciousness. Then accordingly we should speak to them and act towards them in ways that will bring them closer to Krishna. But if somebody is not receptive, then we should not try to force them. We can pray for them, we can chant for them, but we can't force them. Any other questions? Yes.
We understand that we shouldn't take Krishna as our older supplier, but at the same time, we are told that we should depend on Krishna for everything. Just seem a bit contradictory, so I don't know if you can say
it. Well, on one hand we see Krishna's hand in everything, and the other hand we're told to depend on Krishna.
Yeah, we're told we shouldn't take Krishna as order supplier.
We shouldn't take Krishna as the order supplier. On one hand we're told that, and on the other hand we're told that we should always depend on Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right? Yes, it's true. You see, when we are told that we should depend on Krishna, it means we should depend on Krishna once we have done what we are expected to do. We shouldn't avoid doing what we are supposed to do and then justify it by saying, well, we are supposed to depend on Krishna. Let's say, as I give this example often, you're living in a house. Now you're dependent on Krishna for the protection of your house, your family. But do you also have a duty in terms of protecting yourself, your family and your house? Is it also your duty to lock your house at night every night before you go to bed to see that everything is securely done? Yes. After you've done that, you've taken whatever precautions are reasonably possible from your side. Then you depend on Krishna for protection. But if you avoid doing that and you say, well, I'm depending on Krishna for protection, so I'll leave my doors open, wide open, the windows, doors, everything open, and Krishna will protect me. that is not right, because then you're actually testing Krishna. You're actually throwing thing to Krishna, say, Krishna, let's see if you're going to do that. I'm throwing this at you now. See whether you'll hit the ball back to me now. So depending on Krishna means first doing what we're supposed to do and then depending on Krishna. Yes? And after that nothing happens, yes. We take whatever Krishna gives as Krishna's mercy. Right? Any other questions? Yes.
Aren't you talked about a doctor giving the patients do's and don'ts, and typically, you know, if you follow that procedure, you can see very tangible results relatively soon, or if not soon, you know, it's relatively tangible as to what the outcome of those procedures would be. For us to persevere in the spiritual life, and if we follow the process that we're talking about, what are some tangible symptoms that we can feel internally, or a third party person, a guru or somebody senior can observe and just encourage us to say, look, it's happening, and just persevere, because it's hard to see what the tangible symptoms are.
Okay, so the question is that the analogy was given of the doctor giving do's and don'ts. So those results are tangible in a short span of time. So the spiritual instructions that are given to us, the do's and don'ts, what kind of tangible results or symptoms should we expect once we are following the do's and don'ts? The answer is, of course, very simple. We start liking to come to the association of devotees. We start chanting Hare Krishna, which we were not doing earlier. We give up certain activities which we were doing earlier, which we are not supposed to do. We stop doing those activities. In other words, we start doing things that are helpful for Krishna consciousness. We stop doing things that are harmful for Krishna consciousness. It's work in progress. So to the extent that we have progressed in that line, the results will be seen. Now, no longer are we so interested in meeting those old friends and doing the things that we used to do with them. And no longer are we we're so attracted to doing certain activities that we did, we liked to do, but now we don't like to do that. Now we've started liking to come to the association of devotees. We started liking doing this. So these are the tangible symptoms that come very quickly. And then the urge to want to tell others about it. Yes, that's a very important one. Once you become excited with Krishna consciousness, then you want to tell others about it. And you may be even floating, wanting to tell, yes, I want to tell the whole world about Krishna. So these are some of the quick symptoms that come. And they will continue, because the whole life is a period of treatment. Work in progress goes on till our very end of life. Okay? Any other questions? Yes?
Raj, you mentioned that we should try and avoid like, situations in our life that make us forget Krishna. What if, like, how can you do that practically when sometimes we're kind of surrounded by these activities such as at work? Or how can you kind of avoid them?
Your question is that there are some situations which are unavoidable. So what do we do when those situations are unfavorable for our Krishna consciousness? First of all, we have to see whether that situation is really so unavoidable. And that's the first thing we need to see. Get down to the fundamentals. Do I really have to be in this situation? I think it's unavoidable, but is it really so? Examine that very frankly. You know, without your lenses, we take off those Maya lenses and put on Krishna lenses and spectacles and see, do I really need this? And if the answer is yes, then, well, don't get influenced by that. Do whatever is necessary for professional purposes or for social purposes. Sometimes we do need to be in situations which are not favorable. For example, even when I travel, I have to go in a flight, there'll be so many people all around. I can't expect there to be only devotees in the whole flight. What can be done? And you have people doing everything, they eat, they drink, they're doing everything. So well, what to do? So we protect ourselves. We make sure we don't participate in their activities, at least the wrong activities. To the extent that you have to participate in the professional work, if somebody's there, or a student who has to do some study, that's another thing. But don't participate in those activities that are harmful to our Krishna consciousness. And make sure that your batteries, your spiritual batteries, are charged up strongly at other times. So you can remain strong in Krishna consciousness when you are in unfavorable association, when you are sufficiently getting exposed to favorable association. You can be Krishna conscious in negative situations only when you're also Krishna conscious in positive situations. Many times people ask the question, how can I be Krishna conscious at work? That's a common question. The answer is very simple. By being Krishna conscious when you're not at work. Very simple answer. If you utilize the time when you're not at work to be Krishna conscious, which is what you're supposed to do, chanting your rounds, reading Bhagavatam, doing the arati, the kirtan, etc., etc., then that will give you enough Krishna consciousness to be Krishna conscious when you're at work. Right? So how can one be Krishna conscious at work? What's the answer, the one-line answer?
Krishna conscious at work.
By being?
Krishna conscious.
By being Krishna conscious when one is?
Not
at work. I think it's not good enough. I want at least 5 devotees to say that. Okay, agreed?
Yes.
5 devotees. Okay, how can one be Krishna conscious at work? Raise your hand, who would like to say? Yes.
By being Krishna consciousness when not at work.
Okay. How do you how can you be Krishna conscious at work? By being Krishna conscious when you're not at work. How can you be Krishna conscious at work?
By being Krishna conscious not at work.
By being Krishna conscious. By not being Krishna conscious. I think Krishna conscious when you are not at work. Okay. How can you be Krishna conscious when you're at work?
By being Krishna conscious while you're not at work.
Yes.
And also by having Thiragat all the time.
Good.
Helps me come out.
Some places Tilak may not be allowed. But the fundamentally that's it. So one more time. How can you be Krishna conscious when you're at work?
By being Krishna conscious when not at work.
If you're Krishna conscious when you're not at work, then it'll spill over. And even when you're at work, you have to take your precautions, of course. Right? And you have to have little reminders about Krishna, even when at work. Your screensavers and little pictures you carry around and little things which you can do to help you to remember Krishna. Okay? So, thank you very much, Ram Charan Prabhu, Bhagavati Mataji and Vrinda Sundari Devi, for your hospitality and for arranging this nice program and calling so many devotees
for
a Krishna conscious gathering.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.